Hello, it's Wednesday, 5th of August. I'm Hannah Pearson from Pear Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bowerman from Check In Asia.
Today, we're asking, can islands provide a blueprint for the future of travel?
Yes, Southeast Asia is blessed with a spectacular array of island destinations. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today's show is an island hop around Southeast Asia.
Yeah, the idea came to us last week. If you remember at the end of episode 30, Hannah and I asked each other where we would plan to visit when this COVID nightmare is finally over. Mm. Hannah, you chose the Maldives.
Yes.
And I chose Sri Lanka, both of which are island retreats. So that got us thinking.
It did. And although those two destinations aren't in Southeast Asia, we thought we'd examine some island opportunities and challenges as the region seeks to navigate its way out of border closures and travel bans. So Gary, where do we start?
Okay, well, let's begin with a few Southeast Asia island facts and statistics. We are blessed with a huge number of beautiful islands here. So first of all, Indonesia, Hannah, which is the world's largest archipelago in terms of landmass, not in terms of number of islands.
Yep.
So Indonesia counts 17,508 individual islands.
Wow.
Thousands of those are actually uninhabited.
Mm.
But it actually comprises five main islands: Sumatra, Java, Sulawesi, Borneo, and New Guinea, plus 30 other smaller groupings.
Nice. So Philippines, that has 7,641 islands, whilst Thailand has 1,430.
Yeah, and Myanmar, I didn't realise this, counts 800 islands dotted along its west coast.
I hadn't realised that either. No. That's interesting.
So in terms of large islands, New Guinea, which is shared by Indonesia and Papua New Guinea, is the world's second largest island.
I didn't know that either. Oh, I'm learning all sorts of good facts this
and morning. The world's third largest island is also in our region. That's Borneo, which is home to Brunei, the Malaysian states of Sabah and Sarawak, and Indonesia's East Kalimantan. And then also in our region, Sumatra is the world's sixth largest island.
So other islands, you know, that make the headlines around the world from this region are Koh Phi Phi in Thailand, where Maya Beach, which was, you know, the famous setting for the movie and the book The Beach, and that was closed... Well, is closed still for 2 years until 2021 for visitors to allow its natural habitats to regenerate.
Yeah, a similar story in Boracay in the Philippines, which was closed for 6 months in 2018 after President Duterte called it a cesspool.
Yeah, that's not a nice description, is it? And of course, Komodo Island, which is famous as that habitat for Komodo dragons, which is a kind of monitor lizard, that was ordered to close by the Indonesian government, which then reversed its decision in October 2019.
Yeah, it is. And we'll be coming back to Komodo Island in a few moments talking about that. So why are we talking about islands, Hannah? And why do we think that perhaps they're the potential saviour of travel and tourism in Southeast Asia? I think there are a number of reasons for that.
Yep.
Island travel could be well suited for this new reality that we're looking towards, you know, this escape urban centres and crowded mainlands, escaping to nature, avoiding big crowds.
Yeah.
There's also this romantic imagery of escapes to islands.
True.
And we have so many of them. There's so many beautiful ones in every country in the region. The tourism and service infrastructure on some of our islands is pretty well developed as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a great range of resorts and places to stay. Ferry transport ordinarily is usually quite good at the moment. On some of the islands, it's not quite up to full speed. There's obviously the opportunity to meet local people, local dining, fresh seafood, those kinds of things. And of course, they're hugely Instagrammable.
Yes, they are. So, I mean, I think a lot of governments right now are looking at islands as kind of these test cases to benchmark new travel behaviours, expectations, demand levels, and potentially as test cases for reopening just islands as well and seeing how these new visitors impact on second or third waves.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we'll come to in a moment, Hannah, you know, we're seeing that happen quite a lot in through domestic tourism, you know, here in Malaysia, some of the countries around the region. Know, that island travel is starting to gain a little bit of momentum in terms of demand.
It is.
And obviously for the tourism players on those islands, it's a lifeline.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these islands do not tend to have much other kind of local economy, right? It revolves around tourism. So when tourism drops off, they have no source of income, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as we have seen, and Malaysia again is a good case, demand does take time to rebuild, particularly on islands away from crowded centres. So if you look, for example, at the Maldives, which you mentioned last week, Now, they opened in the middle of July. They reopened to tourism. But they've only actually received 1,769 visitors in those 2 weeks, which it's a start, I guess. But the largest single day for visitors was on July the 30th.
Mm.
And that saw just 218 arrivals, which basically isn't even a full plane.
Yeah, and you know, Gary and I were talking about this last week, and we were saying, you know, if you've only got 218 arrivals, but Maldives is made up of all of these tiny islands, of course, people have then got to, you know, are they then taking seaplanes with just two or four people to these places? Are they taking ferries? Think of how many islands there are, how many resorts on those islands. Are they all having to be, I mean, presumably not all of them have chosen to be open, but that's not going to sustain everybody, is it?
Absolutely agree. I mean, it's a start. And I think that's the only positive way to look at this. Yeah. Is that, you know, I was looking at the markets that were from where tourists were coming to, and they're mostly European markets. There was, I think, from Sri Lanka and a couple of other places. But you know, those figures are very small at the moment anyway. Yeah. Because most of the countries in Southeast Asia, you know, our borders are closed. You can't actually get to the Maldives anyway.
Yeah.
And then another case study that we looked at is Seychelles, which reopened its borders on the 1st of August for travellers from 33 mostly European countries, which is divided into two categories, low risk and medium risk. Only two countries are included on the list from Southeast Asia. That's Malaysia and Thailand. And there are three other Asian countries on the list, China, South Korea and Sri Lanka. But as I mentioned before, most of those countries on that list are from Europe, plus Cuba.
Plus Cuba. Cuba. Great to island. Seychelles. Nice. Yeah, I mean, that's a funny list again, choosing Malaysia and Thailand and missing off countries like Vietnam. Though, okay, Vietnam is having this second wave, but probably at the time when they were drawing up that list, I'm sure Vietnam was on.
The only thing I can think of, it must be to do with flight connectivity. I mean, that must be the only reason.
Yeah. So that reopening theme brings us neatly to our first Southeast Asian island stop off, which is Bali. So Bali had a bit of a big week last week, didn't it? It was hitting the news simply because it had reopened to domestic tourism. So on the 31st of July, it reopened to domestic tourists. On that day itself, about 4,000 pax arrived. So Gary, why did Indonesia choose Bali?
Well, that's a multi-million-dollar question. I think the hopes of Southeast Asia and perhaps Asia are looking at Bali at the moment. This opening at the moment is scheduled for September the 11th for international travellers to come back. They obviously have a couple of months to get places back open, up and running again. Domestic tourists can go there. Why was Bali chosen? Well, it is a signature island. It's a holiday destination that everybody knows. It's very, very popular. It is an island, so it's away from the Indonesian mainland.
Yeah.
It's also very popular with Indonesian travellers themselves.
Yes.
I was looking at the figures from last year, and I think it was something like, I can't remember the exact figures, it was something just over 6 million international visitors. But it was almost nearly 5 million domestic visitors to Bali.
Yeah.
So it is popular.
Yep.
So it has this opportunity to reboot. There's the psychological factor, you know, getting tourism back. Bali is an escape to nature destination. Yes. Beautiful beaches, beautiful sceneries, beautiful landscapes. So there's that opportunity. But also there's an economic necessity. Yep. Indonesia's economy is struggling. Bali's economy has been really, really badly hit.
Yep.
Something like 55% of its economy relies directly on tourism.
Wow.
So it needs an uplift.
Yes.
So I think that's why it's chosen. Also, the timing, this would be, the coming months would be the high season for Bali. Obviously, you're looking at September, you're thinking, well, there's an eye there on perhaps the Chinese market opening for Chinese National Day at the beginning of October. I don't think that will happen, but it at least gives them that opportunity for that to happen. So I think a number of reasons that Bali is being used as a test case by Indonesia, because it is the primary holiday destination. But as we said, Hannah, you know, the problem of reopening in September is that most markets, inbound markets to that destination, are still closed.
Yeah. I mean, so even if they open up, who are they opening up to? I mean, definitely not Australia, because Australians are no way going to let their citizens travel to Indonesia at the moment.
No. And Indonesia will also have to change its rules, because foreign visitors are currently banned from entering the country.
Yeah.
So it will actually have to change the rules. It's going to have to thrash out some sort of travel bubble agreement with some countries to get anybody there.
Yeah.
Perhaps it may not even do that. Perhaps it may just let domestic tourists have the run of the place for a while and just see whether there might be stronger demand than there would be in a normal year.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, the one thing that Indonesia did do last week was to negotiate this travel corridor with the UAE, which is, again, just for essential business travel. perhaps that could be expanded and they'll try to tap on the Middle Eastern market to fly to Bali. That could be an option, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, as we've said there, you know, previously, it is sort of a test case that the whole of Southeast Asia is looking at, particularly Thailand. Thailand has sort of retrenched a little bit on its opening of some of its islands. We'll come to that in a minute. But, you know, Bali is just this signature destination that if it can't work there, you've got to be worried it can work anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, and even you had the Minister for National Development from Indonesia saying Bali's recovery is crucial for national and regional tourism. Yeah, for them, it's really crucial that this works.
Yeah. And I think the governor did say, the world is watching us, so we have to get it right.
So. For sure.
There's that added pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
But Indonesia, as we said, it is using Bali as this test case, but it does want to open up some of its other islands, doesn't it, Hannah?
It does, yes. So Komodo National Park will reopen on the 15th of August to domestic tourists, to both locals and foreigners who are residing in Indonesia. But it will only be limited to 25 visitors a day. So that's a pretty small number. It's not really going to sustain the tourism economy there, but it's something, right? Everything has to start somewhere. And I think we maybe touched on this in a podcast a couple of weeks ago, but Indonesia has also been requesting Singapore to reopen its borders with Bintan and Batam, which are the Riau Islands, which are actually very close to Singapore. And traditionally, they have a lot of business from Singaporean travellers, from Malaysian travellers. So they were actually asking Singapore to reopen the borders with Bintan and Batam. I mean, Singapore said no. They said, we've got our general election. We'll review this. We haven't seen anything more about that right now. But it will be interesting to see what happens there. You know, once they've opened Bali, perhaps these islands will be next on the list.
There are so many islands that it can choose from. Lombok might be one of those.
Yeah.
But we'll have to wait and see on that. So that brings us to our next stop, Hannah, which is Malaysia, where the islands on the east and the west coast are proving quite popular with domestic travellers during these early stages of post-lockdown tourism. We saw it, domestic travel demand was slow to start, but it does seem to be kicking off right now.
Yeah, it is picking up, particularly on the weekends. And like you say, you've got islands like Langkawi that's certainly seeing good occupancy on the east coast as well. A lot of the hotels are getting booked up. And you've got islands also looking at different areas within those islands. So Langkawi tourism players have decided that they want to start promoting Cuba Island as a tourism destination. So it's quite a little known island, but last year they started to have speedboat services to it. So it was already starting to pick up a little bit last year. And, you know, with this opportunity with domestic tourism, I guess they're trying to find new destinations to the domestic market, and this could be that.
Yeah, I mean, Langkawi has a lot of opportunity to grow. It is a small archipelago. It's about 99 islands, I think. Most people tend to go to the main island, but you can take boat trips, as you said, around some of the different islands. And it is beautiful as you fly into Langkawi. You know, this archipelago opens up in front of you. It's a very beautiful scenery. So there are opportunities there. But obviously, it's going to need the demand growth to sustain those.
Exactly. And there was a great quote that came out in the Malaysian Reserve last week. And it said, places like Pelangi Beach Resort, the Datai Langkawi, Tanjung Rhu Resort, the Ritz-Carlton, Four Seasons Resort, St. Regis Langkawi and the Andaman, which used to be the getaway for the rich and famous, are now the resting place for a slightly different demography. So you can see, again, people in the domestic market are really enjoying the fact that some of these very luxury five-star hotels are lowering their rates right now. But is that sustainable?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because some of these resorts are reporting averages of about 70% occupancy over the last 2 or 3 weeks, including 100% on weekends.
Yeah.
And as you say, one of the reasons they've managed to do that is because they've dropped their rates. If they can keep sustaining these levels of occupancy, those rates will go back up again.
Yeah.
And that will preclude a lot of the people that are traveling to them right now. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of a balance that they've got to get, I suppose. Yeah.
So if we take a quick trip across the South China Sea to East Malaysia or Borneo.
Yes.
Sabah State there saw its arrivals in the first quarter drop by a staggering 52.7%. And that went up to 98% year on year in May. So they're having to look at new ways also to reboot tourism. The chief minister for the state has urged the federal government to consider giving last year's tourism taxes to the respective states.
Yeah.
And he repeated the call for a devolution in tourism licensing, which would allow Sabah to issue 5 types of tourism licenses. Sabah says that it could be ready for international tourists in September, but this will depend on travel bubbles being negotiated. So there's a huge caveat there.
Absolutely.
Sabah obviously is very popular with the Chinese market and the Korean market. Mm. So it's going to need those to come back to reboot its travel sector.
Yeah. So again, it's will Malaysia allow that? Will they allow Sabah to take those decisions by themselves? Not sure, right?
Everything. Will it be used as a case study?
Yeah,
it's a possibility.
Could be, couldn't it? Mm. So next up on our islands tour is Thailand. And of course, we said Thailand, many, many islands, famous ones, Phuket, Koh Samui, and so on. But they've actually been doing pretty well. So they had a long weekend a couple of weekends ago. It was a 4-day weekend. And the government's domestic stimulus package for tourism actually seems to be working to a certain extent. So Surat Thani province's 3 islands there generated 100 million Thai baht in revenue from mainland visitors. Koh Samui had 17,000 tourists. And, you know, there are about 4,000 who are arriving Koh Samui by ferry, 1,400 by air. So there is this return, like you say, to the islands. And I think this is great to see because at the beginning, when Thailand reopened to domestic tourism, we were mainly seeing those kind of seaside resorts, places like Hua Hin or places like Pattaya that were all within driving distance of Bangkok, having high occupancy levels. But now we are seeing people feeling more comfortable to travel by air or feeling more comfortable to go that little bit further.
Yeah.
And going back to places that, you know, are not so easy to drive to.
Yeah, absolutely. And you read some quite astonishing figures. I don't know how correct these are, but Thailand says that so far this year, it's had 6.69 million international travellers between January and June. So most of those were in the first couple of months of the year. But compare that with 54.5 million domestic travellers. That's a huge figure.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the beginning of the year, they were aiming for like 100 million domestic tourists or something like that.
But then you drill a bit further down. I was reading in an article in the Bangkok Post, and it said that an estimated 80% of travellers to most of these islands are from Bangkok.
Yeah.
So Bangkok is the primary feeder market at the moment because obviously it's the biggest city.
Yes.
But you know, those people aren't going to be traveling every week.
No. Yeah, exactly. So then it leads to that. Is this just the initial bump? Are people just taking advantage of this stimulus program? And once that money has gone or it finishes, are people still going to travel? It's still a big question mark.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think we'll see that in Malaysia as well. There has been this big summer holidays bump. A lot of the expatriates that live here were taking holidays as well.
Yeah.
But the school years have shifted a little bit. So most of the school years are going back to school right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, those holiday periods have sort of ended. The next month will be quite telling in terms of what demand is going to be in the longer term.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the islands that you mentioned there was Phuket. Now, I found something interesting also in the Bangkok Post about a case study idea that they have. It's the Urban Design and Development Center and the Center for Excellence in Urban Strategies in Thailand has this project to revive tourism cities using Phuket as a model.
Okay.
I didn't have too many details. What it said, the aim is design a tourism ecosystem that suits the public health measures. And they can use Phuket as a case for this. It says the main objective is to attract a new group of tourists who are looking for a sanctuary from the pandemic.
Okay.
Making the island an isolated community to reassure visitors of its virus-free status during their stay. So that sort of harks back a little bit to what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, you know, this fear factor.
Yeah.
This idea that people are not going to travel unless they're going to feel 100% safe. And then that links to this week's podcast. Maybe the islands are the places they are going to feel most safe, especially if they create special kinds of facilities or protocols for those islands. I mean, it's a whole new order. I don't know whether this will work, but it's quite an interesting idea.
That is an interesting idea. And I think it also links, they've decided that they want to launch a medical tourism plan. So that kind of goes hand in hand with this. And, you know, they said they want to combine the province's 2 strengths, which is obviously tourism, but also medical services, because obviously they do have medical tourism there. So they actually want to establish 4 medical facilities, with the first phase of this expect to be complete by September next year. So they would, I guess, essentially create a kind of mini medical tourism resort. Where people can get the healthcare and have tourism at the same time.
Yeah, it's a really interesting sector. I've been looking into, actually doing some research into medical and healthcare tourism in the past couple of weeks, and it may be something that we might do a podcast on in the next couple of weeks, because that sector was changing quite dramatically before the pandemic. And it will change dramatically again after the pandemic. But it probably is, you know, a lot of the infrastructure has been set up now. It's quite sophisticated, particularly Malaysia, Thailand. So we may see some interesting new initiatives there, and that's probably something that we'll come back to in the coming week.
So let's move on then to the Philippines, where there are lots of island stories bubbling under.
There are lots of island stories bubbling under. The Philippines also is going through a terrible time with the pandemic at the moment. I think it had its record day of cases yesterday, something more than 6,000 cases. It's pretty much running on an even keel with Indonesia now for cumulative cases. Just slightly behind.
And, you know, the Philippines, last week they had decided that Manila would continue under the general community quarantine. On Sunday they did a complete U-turn on that after health staff frontliners were pretty much begging the government to put them back under stricter guidelines, which they have. So now they're under under MECQ. And of course, actually, what that also means is that there's that direct impact on tourism as well, because now flights are not really permitted into Manila Airport. And of course, we had Philippine Airlines, we had Cebu Pacific last week saying that they were going to increase their flight schedules in August, and that's thrown out of the window almost immediately.
I think probably more than any country in our region, the Philippines shows just how dynamic and fluid this situation is right now, because the Tourism Secretary Bernadette Romulo Poyet said, I think a couple of weeks ago, that the Department of Tourism continues to outline plans of action and protocols at every tourism site in the country, particularly the premier destinations of Palawan, Boracay, Bohol, Davao, and Baguio City. But, you know, that was said maybe a couple of weeks ago, but then it all changes again, you know. It is an archipelago. It does have this opportunity to isolate some of its islands, perhaps. But the cumulative effect of the growth in the pandemic is causing it not just terrible damage in terms of people's health and the public health situation, but you'd have to say probably reputational damage in terms of tourism as well.
You know, we were talking about that, I think, a few episodes ago, episode 29, about fear. And again, you know, they were trying to be very positive, I think, the Tourism Congress of the Philippines, and saying, basically, if we get it right, tourists will come. And we did say then, didn't we, that if you get it wrong, it's gonna burn.
But, you know, they have been trying to put forward some ideas. We've noted a few here. To try and generate some interest in some of its more beautiful and its more accessible islands.
So I think probably the biggest story that came out around islands last week for the Philippines is Cebu, which Cebu Island. I mean, Cebu City is still under. Lockdown is still under GCQ, but Cebu province has been reopened to domestic tourism. And they actually came out, you know, they've got a lot of conditions with it. Obviously, you've got social distancing, you've got registering in advance. But there are some pretty nifty things in there too. So they want to push cashless payments. People will be wearing RFID bracelets to help contact tracing and help limit visitors. But some of the more different things I thought that were quite fun, that visitors will be given a refillable water tumbler on arrival, so that, you know, these one-use plastic bottles for water will be banned, which I thought was a great move.
It's a nice idea.
You know, and that they will be giving freshly squeezed juice to boost the immune system at key attractions upon arrival.
That's a great idea. I like that one.
I really like that. I thought that was good.
Keep and everybody they do healthy. Produce enough fruit. I mean, there is so much fruit in the Philippines that those juices should be easy enough to manage.
Yeah, so I like that. I mean, and on, you know, we were talking about each island is so individual, but yes, they have also the opportunity they keep talking about to create these inter-island bubbles as well. So right now, I think Cebu, Bohol, Negros Oriental, and Siquijor in central Visayas are actually coming together on the 12th of August to further discuss how they can enhance these kind of domestic travel bubbles. Because right now, you have the situation where islands like Boracay are open, but they are only open to residents of the Western Visayas. So in terms of visitors who can go to the places which are already open, is really limited. So they need to somehow band together the islands who are in an okay stage of kind of COVID to get more visitors in.
It's one of the interesting things out of COVID is you've seen how domestic situations in different countries can be very difficult in terms of tourism planning.
Yeah.
In Australia, we've seen this. You know, you presume that Australia has a domestic market, but it's the governance is state-based. You know, there is a federal government, but it's very state-based. So we've seen that, you know, some of the states are actually precluding visitors from other states from coming in. Yeah. You've seen that in the Philippines. Yes. You've seen that in Indonesia as well.
Yeah.
These countries that are difficult to manage because the central government doesn't have the overarching power on certain elements of tourism.
Yeah,
I mean, that's something that will endure into the future.
Yeah, and definitely makes tourism players' lives a lot more difficult.
Much harder. Especially when things are so dynamic and changing, you know, the regulations are changing quite fluid. Yeah, it's a very difficult situation. So finally, Hannah, we're going to take a trip to Cambodia. Now, you've been to some of the islands down in the south, haven't you?
Yeah, I went to Koh Rong, a lovely little eco-resort there. It was a terrifying ferry ride there. Genuinely, on the way home, I thought I was going to die.
How long does it take to get out
there? I was quite sure. I think it was definitely less than an hour, but that ferry ride back felt like a lifetime. I still have flashbacks now, but it was worth it. So, I mean, there are obviously lots of tourism businesses that are on Koh Rong, Koh Rong Samlon as well, and they have not had much business. You know, they are also in that kind of unfortunate position of, obviously, a lot of tourists are coming from places like Phnom Penh in terms of domestic tourists, and it's just a little bit too far to go. Sihanoukville, yes, you can probably make it, but then to take another ferry ride on top of that is not really quite feasible for a weekend trip.
Sure.
But they have the replacement Khmer New Year holidays coming up in August, so they are looking forward to that and hoping that that's going to revive the business.
Yeah, it's going to be a five-day holiday, I think. It's the 17th to the 21st of August. There's this big push in Cambodia to get people to go travel.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity with 5 days, so yeah, you'll hope that people will disperse across the whole country because there's, you know, take some of this spending into rural areas, into regional areas. There's an opportunity to do that. And one of the other things that you notice about Koh Rong is they actually have this master plan as well for development, don't they, going forward, which could include a new airport.
Yeah.
I was reading that some of the resorts there basically decided over the last 2 or 3 months to write those months off. They weren't going to get any tourists. And quite a lot of them have been renovating and putting different styles into their resorts.
Nice.
So that when the rebound does come, they'll be ready for it. And some of them are saying they do already have quite strong bookings for the Khmer New Year holiday.
That's great to hear. Let's hope that they have a strong holiday then.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. Another country that can start really developing its domestic tourism economy.
So, Gary, that almost brings us to the end of this week's Island Escapes edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
It does indeed. We hope you enjoyed the show. And as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts and insights on island travel, both now and in the future. So please send us a note by email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or on our Facebook page, The SEA Travel Show, or on Twitter, SEA Travel Show.
Yes, and please continue to add your comments and personal experiences onto our LinkedIn page, The Southeast Asia Travel Show. And of course, you can catch up with our 30 previous podcasts on our first two Friday Rewind shows on our website, theseasiatravelshow.com, and on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, and Stitcher. Phew. Just search for The Southeast Asia Travel Show on any of those platforms.
Next week, Hannah and I will be back with our usual midweek podcast, plus the third edition of our 15-minute Friday Rewind show.
Yeah, and that's a wrap for this week. We're both off to plan island getaways, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.